HR Info. Das Interview.
Mit Jan Tussing. Dieser Mann ist ein Shootingstar der amerikanischen Literaturszene. Sein Roman The Underground Railroad wurde 2016 mit dem Pulitzer Prize Fiction und dem National Book Award ausgezeichnet und war eines von 5 Büchern auf der Sommerferien-Leseliste von Ex-Präsident Barack Obama. Der afroamerikanische Autor Colson Whitehead wird als Ausnahmegestalt der amerikanischen Gegenwartsliteratur gehandelt und die Lobeshymnen für seine Erzählungen überschlagen sich. Colson Whitehead hat ein neues Buch geschrieben, Die Nickel Boys, über den grausamen rassistischen Alltag in einem amerikanischen Jugendstrafheim Anfang der 60er Jahre in Florida. Darüber wollen wir jetzt mit ihm sprechen. Colson Whitehead, herzlich willkommen. Welcome.
Hey, howdy.
The name of your new novel is The Nickel Boys. It takes place in Florida in the 1960s. It's the times of the Black Civil Rights Movement in the U.S., and we meet an ambitious, friendly man. His name is Elwood. He's 16 years old. More or less by accident, he happens to be a passenger in a stolen car and is stopped by the police. And since he's innocent, nothing bad could happen, you would suppose. But that's not what's going to happen. Why is it going all wrong?
Well, he's a black boy in 1960s Florida, and it's the height of Jim Crow, which is a series of laws that restricted black life and liberty in the American South after slavery. Slavery ends, and they invent a new system of laws and legislation that continues the oppression in different ways. So even though he is innocent, there's no way he's going to escape punishment.
This could happen anytime today as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you're a young person of color, you could be stopped at any time by the police, interrogated, hauled in for questioning, for being the wrong color in the wrong place. You know, when I was younger, I was stopped. My friends were stopped. I've been handcuffed and brought out to a squad car because a white lady was mugged 3 blocks away, and I was the first black person the cops found to take in. So, at any moment, your liberty can be taken away from you, and that's a continuation from slavery and Jim Crow up to now.
The story takes place in Florida. It's the beginning of the 60s. What was the situation for black people in the U.S. then, and what was different in the South?
Well, I mean, legally, we could vote. It was possible to create poll taxes where, you know, white people would be free to vote and black folks would have to pay to vote. They had literacy tests where you might ask a white person, who's the president? And they say John F. Kennedy. And then a black voter comes and they say, recite the Declaration of Independence. And of course, you know about segregation. We had separate schools, separate entrances for restaurants, couldn't eat, had to drink from separate water fountains. So there's a whole host of laws that perpetuated slavery in a different sort of way. And that was the fact until 64 and 65, when there was new legislation, new amendments that stopped a lot of these practices. And my book takes place in 1963, so it's the height of Jim Crow and also the height of the civil rights movement, where there is change on the horizon, and that's where we find Elwood.
Whiteheads Buch spielt 1963 in Florida auf dem Höhepunkt der Jim Crow-Gesetze. Gesetze, die eingeführt wurden, um das umfassende System der Rassentrennung in den USA aufrechtzuerhalten. Die Sklaverei war abgeschafft, aber durch diese Gesetze wurde das System der Unterdrückung auf andere Weise weitergeführt, sagt Colson Whitehead. In den 60er Jahren durften Schwarze in den Südstaaten wählen. Theoretisch, wurden aber oft abgehalten. Es war die Zeit, in der die schwarze Bürgerrechtsbewegung in den USA aufkam. Und hier begegnen wir dem jungen Elwood, Whiteheads Romanhelden. You grew up in New York City in the 70s. That's 10 years, like a little bit more than 10 years after the story in the book. How would the story be different in the 70s for you in New York?
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. You can't really transpose the situations. The reform school I write about was set up to give a place for juvenile offenders so that they wouldn't become hardened criminals. You don't want to lock them up with adult criminals. The idea was that you give them education one day, classes, and then they learn a trade, farm the next day. And when they came out into polite society, they might, you know, rejoin the normal folks. But of course, it didn't work out that way. Whenever you get people involved, even the best ideas come to ruin. And so the school that my book is based on, Dozier, opened in 1900. And by 1903, there were already finding kids as young as six shackled in chains in solitary confinement. And every couple years there'd be investigations and promises of reform, and nothing ever happened. And this went on for 110 years. And so 1960s Florida is not New York in the 70s, but the kind of abuse we find at Dozier, the school, you find in orphanages and various places where people aren't taking care of young children, and the powerful can sort of prey on the powerless.
The Nickel Academy was a real place.
Yes. And, you know, it was segregated. There were 600 kids, and maybe it was 60% black or 40% white, depending on the year. And the black kids got it worse, but the white kids got it, you know, terrible as well. And when I first came to the story in 2014, a lot of the adult survivors who were telling their stories in the press were white men in their 60s and 50s, kids who'd been there, you know, decades before. But there are very few, you know, black survivors who came forward. And so I started to wonder what the black side of campus was like.
Die Jugendanstalt, über die Colson Whitehead schreibt, die Nickel Academy, hat es wirklich gegeben. Sie wurde gegründet, damit jugendliche Straftäter später wieder in die Gesellschaft eingegliedert werden konnten. So das Ideal. Aber bereits 3 Jahre nach der Gründung wurde beobachtet, wie 6-jährige Kinder in Ketten gefesselt und in isolierte Zellen gesteckt wurden. Es gab immer wieder Untersuchungen, aber das System hielt sich 110 Jahre.
Eventually in 2011, there's another wave of journalism about the place, and it was closed down, which was good, except when they were going to sell the land off to developers, they found 55 unmarked graves. There's an official graveyard where they buried kids who died of influenza or, you know, whatever, and they found 55 unmarked graves, and they dug them up and did forensic analysis, and they found some kids with shotgun pellets in their rib cages. They found kids with blunt trauma to their skulls. And people had always said that kids were being killed there. You know, they'd tell their parents that they'd run off, but actually they were in the ground. So the place closed in 2011, but they're still investigating. They're still finding places in the ground that might be bodies. They're still digging up the ground to investigate.
And I suppose there's a huge outcry, and everybody's talking about it, and everybody's, you know, trying to find the people that did this stuff and putting them to jail.
Not really, no. I mean, you know, the survivors tell stories of different superintendents and guards who abused them in the 50s and 60s. But nothing ever happened to them. They worked there for decades. These guards retired, got pensions. Some of them got Citizen of the Year awards from their communities. So there is outcry. And because of my book and also the new bodies, the new possible bodies they found, there's more attention. But it's not like it's a national news story. It comes up. So people aren't outraged in the way that you'd hope.
Sie hören HR Info, das Interview mit Colson Whitehead, der über seinen Roman Die Nickel Boys spricht. 2011 wurde die Nickel Academy geschlossen. Auf dem Gelände wurden 55 anonyme Gräber gefunden. Diese wurden untersucht und man stellte bei einigen Leichen Einschüsse im Oberkörper fest. Andere hatten Schädelverletzungen. Es wurden immer wieder Morde vermutet, wenn Kinder verschwanden. Den Eltern wurde gesagt, die Kinder seien weggelaufen, aber wahrscheinlich liegen sie in diesem Massengrab. Das werde immer noch untersucht, sagt Colson Whitehead.
And when you dug up the past of the Nickel Academy, what were the feelings that you had when you learned about all these different fates?
Well, I mean, it was the summer of 2014 when they started doing analysis of the bodies. And it bubbled up into the national media for one day. And it was the summer of Ferguson, Missouri, when Michael Brown was killed by a white policeman. He's a young black teenager. The summer where Eric Garner in Staten Island was selling bootleg cigarettes, and he was choked to death while being apprehended by a white policeman. And it seemed that all these incidents of police brutality never come to anything. No one's ever held accountable. We hear about them because someone has a cell phone and is recording it. But how many instances are we not recording? How many incidents of police brutality escape our gaze because no one's holding a camera? And so it seemed that when I came across the story of Dozier that if there's one place like this, how many other places where this sort of thing is happening? It made me wonder, and that's when I started thinking about making it into a book.
Als die Geschichte mit den anonymen Gräbern publik wurde, berichtete die nationale Presse. Aber es erzeugte nicht den Druck und die Empörung, die man sich gewünscht hätte. Es war der Sommer, in dem der schwarze Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, umgebracht wurde und Eric Garner in New York von weißen Polizisten erwürgt wurde, weil er illegal Zigaretten auf der Straße verkaufte. Für Whitehead erscheint es so, als ob Polizeigewalt nie geahndet und nie jemand zur Rechenschaft gezogen würde. Manchmal gäbe es Videoaufnahmen mit einem Handy, aber Whitehead fragt sich, wie oft solche Vorfälle nicht dokumentiert werden. Als er 2014 von der Nickel Academy erfuhr, dachte er an die vielen Jugendanstalten, von denen man noch nichts gehört hatte. So entstand die Buchidee.
Colson, you've graduated from Harvard. Are there many African American that graduate from Harvard?
Not proportionate to our presence in the population, but yes, I had a lot of friends and I still hang out with black poets who I met 30 years ago and we're all still writing.
You're a little celebrity in that intellectual circle in the United States, I guess. Do you feel discrimination today?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I've had a sort of good run the last couple of years, so I'm lucky. In terms of day-to-day discrimination, no. When I step into, in terms of in the literary world, I'm mostly in my house, not talking to anybody and working. If I step into an elevator and there's a white person inside and they get sort of startled because a black person stepped into the elevator, that's, and sort of minor events like that are, you know, fairly routine. In terms of my work life, I think your question more points to the day-to-day small acts of racism that's, you know, part of life in the United States.
On a literary note, I mean, in the past you've switched up genres, horror stories, nonfiction. So you decided to write a fiction movie on something that used to be real, the Nickel Academy. What was the intention for that?
Just the idea stayed with me. And, you know, after I heard about the news reports, you know, 3 years later, it was time to get back to work. And the Nickel Boys seemed more compelling. We just elected Donald Trump. Where was our country heading? Were we making progress as a culture? Were we regressing? And it seemed that the optimistic character of Elwood, who we talked about earlier, and the more pessimistic or cynical character named Turner, who's also a big part of the novel. You know, in exploring these two characters, I could explore my own ideas of hopefulness or hopelessness through these two young boys.
Colson Whitehead, der selbst Afroamerikaner ist, fühlt sich nicht diskriminiert. Meistens arbeitet er von zu Hause aus. Aber er bemerkt manchmal die verängstigten Blicke weißer Menschen, wenn er in einen Fahrstuhl zusteigt. Dass Whitehead mit der Nickel Academy wieder ein Rassismusthema zu einem Roman verarbeitet hat, hängt auch mit Donald Trump zusammen. Der war gerade gewählt worden und Whitehead fragte sich, in welche Richtung die USA sich wohl entwickeln würden. Mit den beiden Charakteren im Buch, dem jungen Elwood und dem eher negativ besetzten Charakter Turner, der ebenfalls eine Rolle in seiner Erzählung spielt, mit diesen beiden Personen wollte Whitehead seine eigenen optimistischen und pessimistischen Gedanken erforschen.
Part of our interview is a little surprise I told you about that we put in a box and it's the time now to open it.
All right.
Okay.
There's a strange light emanating from the box. And it is a deck of playing cards.
Do you play poker?
I do play poker. You know, I was an amateur poker player. And 3 books ago, I wrote a book about going to the World Series of Poker.
Do you gamble for money?
Yes. I mean, $5. You know, like my monthly game is a $5 buy-in. Unfortunately, I have this thing where if I write about something, I get really sick of it. And so writing about the World Series of Poker and training to play in tournaments, I really did kill some of the joy of playing poker. So I've only played in a casino once in the last like 10 years, 8 years.
Paul Watzlawick wrote the line, "Life is a game and the first rule is, this is not a game." Do you believe in luck that can just fall into your lap when gambling or in life?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure different people who gamble have different ideas about how luck works. But if you didn't believe that the gods would suddenly smile upon you at the roulette wheel, you have to believe that for some reason, inexplicably, the gods will smile upon you and change your fortune. At the next turn of the card, the next roll of the dice will reveal your fate.
Do you believe in this? That this could happen to you?
I'm not going to become rich at the roulette table. But you do what, you know, if you play 14, you hope that 14 will come up the next round, even though it's there's an equal chance of 14 and 21, all these different numbers coming up.
So you believe that you actually have to work hard to achieve what you want in life and not wait for...
Well, I mean, there's the card table, and then there's making art, and I've had success with the last two books in a different sort of scale. But I thought my poker book was really good. I thought my zombie book was pretty good. I thought my coming-of-age novel was pretty good. And you can't really put the same effort into all of them. But you can't count on people sort of getting what you're doing all the time. And so in that case, it's, for me, it's sort of random. I have no idea like which book people will connect to, which book will be ignored or embraced. It does take some luck sometimes, I think.
Randomness is like, it's like a key word when you're checked randomly like Elwood in your novel. That's pretty random.
Yes. I mean, you know, Elwood is a really smart kid. He's been inspired by the civil rights movement and sees himself as part of this generation that's changing the world. And that's what he wants to do, you know, be a real positive force. And he hitchhikes in the wrong car. So he doesn't deserve to be at the Nickel Academy, but really no one deserves the kind of treatment you get there, whether you're a juvenile offender or an orphan or someone who's sent there randomly. And so it is fate that puts him there. But no one really deserves the kind of treatment that they got.
Als Colson Whitehead ein Kartenspiel in der HR-Infobox findet, erzählt er vom Pokerspiel und davon, immer wieder auch mal kleine Summen zu setzen. Vor einiger Zeit hat er ein Buch über Poker-Weltmeisterschaften geschrieben. Er selbst glaubt an Glückszufälle, aber auch daran, dass man hart arbeiten muss, um erfolgreich zu sein. Leider weiß er nie, auf welches Buch die Öffentlichkeit anspringt. Insofern gehört immer auch eine gehörige Portion Glück dazu. Zufall und Glück spielen in Whiteheads Buch jedenfalls eine große Rolle, denn Elwood wurde rein zufällig von einer Polizeistreife angehalten. Elwoods Schicksal sei Zufall. Aber niemand verdiene so ein Schicksal.
Colson, when Barack Obama was elected first US president in American history as a black president in 2008, many people thought that there was like a new era in history. Did you feel that moment that there was a new era?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I never thought when I was a kid that we'd have a black president. And I think a lot of people were delighted and surprised. I think that optimism was expressed by a lot of people as this idea of post-raciality. But that was really like sort of a white idea. No black person would think that just because we have a black president, suddenly racism is gone. So it was really silly to hear people talk about post-raciality. Donald Trump is pretty terrible, but one good thing is that no one uses the word post-racial anymore. It was annoying then, and now definitely no one would put forth the idea of such a thing.
Mm-hmm. Today, I mean, 11 years later, an openly racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic president runs the country who wants to send US citizens with non-white origin back home. I mean, what do you observe? Do white Americans feel now incited to start hating?
Well, I think, you know, not all white Americans, but Obama got like 51% of the vote. 49% didn't vote for him. And those are people, a lot of those people who didn't vote for him are Trump supporters who are enraged at the idea of black advancement, the advancement of women. You know, when they say make America great again, they mean make America like it was in the 50s when a white guy could be a white guy and not worry about people of color and women encroaching upon their power. And so we'll always have, you know, that 45% of sort of racist morons.
That's a big number.
It is a big number. And that's the world. And, you know, if you talk about demagogues rising, it's not just in America, it's Brazil, it's parts of Eastern Europe. I never thought that we'd have a neo-Nazi march in Virginia with people not wearing masks like it did in the good old days. But there are neo-Nazi marches, you know, happening in various places all over.
HR Info, das Interview mit dem Autor Colson Whitehead, der den vielbeachteten Roman Die Nickel Boys geschrieben hat. Als Barack Obama gewählt wurde, waren viele Menschen überrascht. Whitehead selbst hatte nicht damit gerechnet, zu Lebzeiten einen schwarzen Präsidenten zu sehen. Viele dachten an das Ende von Rassismus und sprachen von einem postrassistischen Zeitalter, was Whitehead ärgerlich und dumm findet. Trump sei wirklich furchtbar, aber wenigstens redet heute niemand mehr von Postrassismus. Wenn Leute sagen, Amerika wieder groß zu machen, dann denken sie an die 1950er Jahre, als das Land von Weißen regiert wurde und niemand sich um Schwarze zu scheren brauchte. Deshalb glaubt Whitehead auch, dass eine Hälfte des Landes immer rassistisch bleiben werde. So sehe eben die Welt aus. Es gäbe immer mehr Demagogen, ob in Brasilien oder Osteuropa. Dennoch hätte Whitehead nie gedacht, dass im US-Bundesstaat Virginia Neonazis marschieren würden, ohne ihre Gesichter zu maskieren.
When you look at, you know, 1998, California Police, Rodney King brutally being, you know, beaten up, sent to hospital, and that was filmed like accidentally. And it was a huge outcry and riots starting when the police officers that perpetrated that crime weren't put to jail. Today, black men arrested by the police are shot dead. This happens all the time on the daily basis. Things get worse. They don't get better.
I don't think it's actually worse. I mean, I think, you know, the future of my life has been observing a high-profile police brutality case and outrage, and then things go back to normal, the same way that at Dozier School there'd be investigations and people be outraged, and then things go back to normal. So I don't think there's an increase in police brutality incidents, but there's an increase in cell phones. We have the technology to record all this stuff now. And it goes back to what I was saying before. If we capture the deaths of Eric Garner and Michael Brown, how many things are we not capturing? So the technology reveals what's always been there, but the same way a new telescope doesn't discover new stars, it just reveals the sort of ancient stars that have always been there. We have the technology to see stuff that's always been around us. So we've always had crooked and racist white law enforcement. We will continue to have that for our lifetimes.
And when you observe maybe the black community, is there some resistance movement, or are people, you know, getting guns to protect themselves? Is there something going on like this?
That's like a conservative white fantasy. going back to slavery. If we free the slaves, won't they rise up and kill us? Actually, the slaves, you know, who were free just wanted to live. And in the 60s, when you had, you know, black power movements, there was this, you know, sort of crazy fear that people be running around the streets with machine guns. Actually, people just want to live. And it probably is wise to get a gun. I think the sort of racist fantasy of a black uprising is just that, a racist fantasy.
Well, I thought you would have switched it up, because maybe not black people get guns, but maybe white people get more guns. And when you look at all the paramilitary movements that you actually observe across the border, defending the border, I get the feeling that it's not the black community that's trying to get violent. It's more the white movements, as you said, the Virginia neo-Nazi moves, where people are getting more and more confident in showing power and showing violence.
I mean, definitely. And, you know, when Obama was elected, there was a spike in gun sales because people thought, you know, Obama was going to take their guns. Of course, it didn't happen. When Trump was elected, gun sales fell, you know, for a period, because that threat of the government taking our guns away had disappeared. But, you know, there are plenty of psychos out there who are buying assault weapons. We have, I mean, I'm sure, as you know, you're as appalled as we are at our psychotic gunmen shooting people in schools, at malls, at concerts. That kind of thing doesn't happen anywhere else except in America. So yes, there are plenty of guns and plenty of psychos who are stocking up.
Whitehead glaubt nicht, dass die Brutalität und Gewalt schlimmer geworden sei. Es gäbe einfach nur immer mehr Handys, die diese Gewalt aufzeichnen. So wie ein neues Teleskop, das keine neuen Sterne findet, sondern alte Sterne plötzlich entdeckt, die schon immer da waren.
You've got two kids growing up in New York.
Yeah.
Growing up in New York City. What do you wish for them?
Well, you know, that they find some kind of job that's not too crappy, that gives them a sense of purpose, that they make a good living. You know, I suppose we've been talking sort of gloom and doom the last, you know, 25 minutes. But, you know, my grandparents and parents had the hope that their children would grow up in a better world than they were in. And I hope that for my kids. I hope that 30 years from now, they're not living underground in the cave because global warming has destroyed the atmosphere. So I hope for them that they're better than we are.
Colson Whitehead, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war HR Info, das Interview mit dem US-amerikanischen Buchautor und Pulitzer-Preisträger Colson Whitehead, der sein neues Buch Die Nickel Boys veröffentlicht hat. Mein Name ist Jan Tussing.